Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the relationships making the headlines in politics today and exploring the psychology and personalities in political and national life. In this week's episode, as the nation, perhaps a large part of the world, comes to terms with the death of Queen Elizabeth II and the arrival of a new monarch in King Charles, I'm thrilled to say that I'm joined by contemporary historian, Sir Anthony Seldon. Hello, Sir Anthony.
Hello, Lucy.
Really lovely to have you on my podcast. It's obviously been a seismic few days. How did you feel personally when you heard the news that the Queen's health was of serious concern, firstly, and then shortly afterwards that she had died?
Well, definitely sad and very sad indeed, and almost surprisingly sad, because it brings back one's own losses in one's own life. My wife died 5 years ago, for example, from cancer. My parents died about 10 years ago. And any death diminishes us, as John Donne wrote. And it did. I felt it strongly.
And were you surprised that, in fact, her health had reached that level of seriousness?
I was, because I'd been chatting to somebody very close to the royal family and just a day or two before, and they'd said that she'd be good for 5 years. So I didn't believe the early reports, but the news came.
So it was a bit of a shock for you. And as you say, it mobilised some earlier losses in your life, which you've written about extensively, particularly about your wife. So I think people will be able to relate to your experience that actually, sometimes the death of a very significant national figure can remind us of losses that we ourselves have had, and also the ending that's going to come for all of us at some point. We just don't know when that hangs over us, I guess. You're a historian, you're a former headmaster. What do you think people will say about this Elizabethan age? What might they teach in schools?
Well, British history is not taught that much in schools, and we need to have a longish period before we can take a chunk, so we can study the Second World War and the First World War. It's quite hard to find anything chewy to pick up on the post-war period, but the Elizabethan age saw the most extraordinary transition of Britain, the decline of empire, and the decline of Britain undoubtedly as a global power. It finished the Second World War as the third most significant power on earth after the USA and the USSR, but a period of incredible transition, the building of a welfare state, an era of much greater equality and inclusivity for people of different nationalities, different faiths, all kinds of difference. I mean, Britain has just become a very inclusive, tolerant society, which I'm not certain it was back in 1952.
And also great growth in things like science, maybe, education. What do you think?
Yes, I mean, the quality of education with the school leaving age at 14, going up to 15 when she came to the throne. And if you were unlucky enough, to put it that way, to not have parents who lived in a place where you could go to a good state school, or lucky enough for them to be able to afford the independent school fees, you couldn't. It was a bit hit and miss. And so the top universities, including Oxford and Cambridge, were dominated by those who'd been either at independent school or at grammar school. And grammar schools were heavily dominated by middle-class children. So Britain has become a much more equal society with much more, sort of a long way to go, but we're moved a lot closer to where educational opportunity is open to those of real ability, rather than having fortunate parents or being lucky enough to be in the catchment area of a great school.
Mm. So in a way, the Elizabethan age that you're describing is an age of great change. And I guess right now, as a nation, we are going through yet another period of change, a period of transition. Anyway, from what you've seen, how do you think we're doing since last Thursday?
And by the way, considerably more change in this Elizabethan age than in the first Elizabethan age, Britain, England, as it was. Scotland hadn't yet joined, and Wales. Life was pretty much the same in 1603 as it had been in 1558, when Elizabeth came to the throne. Britain is vastly more different in 2022 when Elizabeth II died compared to 1952 when she came to the throne. So, and I think Prince Charles is adapting. Everyone is going to just be slightly waiting and seeing. He didn't have that easy ability and charisma and lovability of his first wife, Diana. And indeed, there's still anger and resentment amongst people towards him and towards Camilla, the woman who was seen to have played her part in the ending of that first marriage. And he just doesn't have that same ability to communicate that either the Queen had or Diana had. And yet he has, I think in the walkabout that you saw a man, and in the speeches you hear somebody who isn't arrogant, who does want to reach out and touch other people, both physically but also emotionally. So he is far more emotionally intelligent than some people have thought. And I think he's partly responsible for not more people thinking that he is more emotionally intelligent. He doesn't always communicate as well as he might do.
And do you think that's going to be one of his challenges then as king, to either change people's perception of him or to reinvent himself or to be a different Charles to the one he's been before?
Well, clearly there's been a loss, hasn't there? I mean, when we lose a parent, and people have spoken about her being a mother or like a grandmother, when we lose these people, they're gone forever. Here we've lost that equivalent person, and yet they're reborn, but in a male form and a younger form. And it will be interesting to see exactly how he takes his place in the heart of the nation, and will the nation learn to love him and to follow him and accept him and accept his words as something that they can take to heart and be affected by? Will the Scots and the Irish, Northern Irish, whose continued maintenance within the United Kingdom cannot be taken for granted, will they feel that this is somebody who they can do business with, that they can feel is their monarch? Will they voluntarily give him their love and support? And he will be wanting to do that. And I think the more he is himself, perhaps the less he listens to some of the advisors of old, the better he will do.
But as you highlight there, it's a contract with two parties, isn't it? There's the king's side, but also the nation and the subjects, but also the different parts of the union. So it's not just going to be down to him then.
No, but he, some people will never be receptive. Some people have already made their mind up on the monarchy or made up their mind about him, and they're still angry or indifferent, or they didn't like the way he looks, or they didn't like his age, or they didn't like his gender, or they didn't like his views. You can meet people who can fit every opinion, and yet he needs to make himself lovable and likable and admirable, and in a way that his mother did, and it was easier for her because she was a beautiful young woman and frail and vulnerable, and people felt protective towards her. Losing her father at the age of just 56 when he died, and she was just 25, and that's terribly young to lose your father. And she rose to that challenge, and the bonding that took place at that stage never left, or there were one or two moments when it frayed a bit of the seams. But He doesn't have that. He doesn't look lovable. He doesn't look beautiful. He doesn't look young. He doesn't look vulnerable in the same way. You know, he's a mature, very mature man. He's 73. And so he's got to get that right. I mean, already we're starting to identify not with a child or a sister, as we did with the Queen in 1952, but we're having to identify with a grandfather we didn't even know that we had, and perhaps we didn't want to have. And we have to make a child's space whole for him, or space for him in our hearts and in our minds.
Gosh, and maybe some of the scenes that we've seen already, your phrase about him was that he isn't vulnerable, but we have seen him maybe in the last 48 hours walking behind the coffin in Scotland, standing last night at vigil in St. Giles Cathedral. Maybe those are the moments of vulnerability that can start to have an impact on his subjects, on the nation.
Well, if we're not vulnerable, we're not lovable, are we? And we need to display vulnerability and authenticity to invoke that sense of love in the hearts of others. And I think he did do that. So you could see that during the speeches at Westminster Hall, when his reaction to those speeches was very memorable, when he seemed close to tears and his eyes seemed to water over, or when he was standing by the coffin up in St. Giles Cathedral in the Royal Mile in Edinburgh, and you saw again a man who has lost his mother. So you know, there are some people for whom a display of emotion is unmanly, or it's unkingly, or it's deplorable in human terms. I don't know why some people think that way, because it's clearly not a human way.
Although at some point I'm going to have to get you back onto my podcast to discuss whether one has to always be vulnerable in order to be loved. But that might have to be a topic for another podcast.
I'm very happy to talk about that. We may disagree, we may agree when we drill down into it. But I think that if we come across always as perfect, or always as unassailable, always there's a distance, a separation between us, an invisible wall between us and other people, it means that we might fear somebody or respect them. You might even admire them, but we can't feel a sense of fondness, because there's nothing to come back at us. Our hearts are not touched.
Definitely one for a future podcast, I think. When you're talking to me about King Charles at the moment, we also need to think that he's going to reign for the rest of his life, but almost by definition, it's going to be shorter. It's going to be a shorter reign than that of his mother's. But could it be more significant, do you think? Are there some things on the horizon, or maybe even not on the horizon, just around the corner, like issues around the Commonwealth, for example? Do you think his reign could be more significant than hers?
In those terms, yes. I mean, Scotland could well. Perhaps a 50-50 that Scotland will be independent by the end of his reign, that Ireland might unify, and the Commonwealth will be vastly changed. All these things are entirely possible. Mm-hmm. And that Britain's position in the world post-Brexit, the marvellous things that we were told would happen to Britain and to the British economy, all the benefits, will turn out to have been chimera.
And he may have to respond to that.
Yeah, that'll be tough for him, won't it? What is it that does unite this country? The monarchy, our shared language, our shared history, our memories of the Second World War, now fading year on year, no longer a common religion, no longer even a common BBC, as more and more people tune into Amazon and Prime, Netflix, and other radio and television stations, that there is less that unites us. So the monarchy, you know, doesn't have a Netflix version on the monarchy or a multi-faith version of Christianity, the monarchy is the same and will be enduringly important in holding the country together, if indeed the country does hold together.
Well, you've presented there quite a few of the challenges for King Charles. Obviously, what happened only 2 days before the death of Queen Elizabeth was that we also had a change of prime minister. What challenges do you think this period poses for Liz Truss?
Every prime minister wants to win their own general election, and then you get your own personal mandate. You're no longer inheriting the gift from your predecessor. You now fully justify your position at number 10 because you've been elected yourself, and you've been elected on a set of policies which are your policies, not the previous woman or man's policies. So she's going to want to do that, and yet to do that cuts across what she's going to need to do, because she will need to take drastic action to see the country through that could result in some very tough things happening, which will make her unpopular. But the more she does things that will make her unpopular, including reforming the NHS, even though it will be in the long-term interest of everybody, the turbulence won't. So what she most needs to do, which will be unpopular as she reconstructs the country, will be the very things that will lose her the general election. Therefore, she is unlikely to do those things that will damage her voting support. It's a prisoner's dilemma for her.
It is a prisoner's dilemma, yes. And I think that whilst we recognise that this is a very unusual period of time with a national mourning period, which very few of us will have ever gone through, that I don't think there's very much patience for the nation to think about how quickly the government needs to get a grip. She's probably got to hit the ground running from Tuesday onwards after the funeral.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to bounce straight back into action. In a way, it's a good thing for the government because it does give them a few days' space where the spotlight is off them. And it's very hard to think if you're a government and you've got the blaze of media demanding instant responses, but it will be tough, and it's always tough for politicians, and nothing prepares somebody to become monarch, although Charles had 50 years as an adult, 55 from the age of 18 to prepare for the job that he's just succeeded to. Liz Truss didn't have anything like that, and nothing prepares anyone to be prime minister, because the challenges that you have to face, the strains on you and your family, and on you emotionally and physically and intellectually, all three of those are immense and out of all scale with what you have done. You may have been Chancellor of the Exchequer, you may have been Home Secretary or Foreign Secretary or Leader of the Opposition, but none of those jobs are anything like preparing the PM to be the PM.
And in a way, my final question to you really is going back to King Charles then, because a similar situation has existed for him. As you say, he has been aware that he will be the next monarch on the death of his mother, and he's been aware of that for decades now. And now it's come. It has finally arrived. That moment has arrived. And it may end up being incredibly different to how he thought it would be, even though he was up close and personal to seeing how the Queen operated. It's bound to be different, isn't it? Actually living it.
Well, everything is different, Lucy, when you are the person doing it. You can watch any number and witness any number of times somebody doing something. When one becomes a parent for the first time, a mother or even a father, it's a very different experience to having watched one's friends maybe have children or siblings. It's suddenly in three dimensions and in rich colours and with feelings that before were imaginations but which are now real.
And that's what he's going through right now.
Yeah, that is, Lucy, absolutely what he's going through now. Thank you so much for having me on.
No, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.